Hello and welcome to the Comic Cast. I'm Craig.
I'm Liam.
And we are here with another episode of Ireland's number one comic book podcast, the Comic Cast. It is October. The cold is settling in. It'll be Christmas soon. It'll be Halloween even sooner.
Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it'll be Thanksgiving somewhere in between those two holidays. It is this season of festive joy around the corner. Are you excited about Christmas?
What a stupid question. Yeah. Of course I'm excited about Christmas. I think the very fact that we do like a Nuts Christmas special every year for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think shows our love for Christmas.
Yeah, I love Christmas.
So definitely in the next maybe podcast or two, we'll definitely have our kind of Christmas comic book gift list.
Oh yeah,
so you can get it in time, because I think usually we do it about a week before Christmas,
usually a week after Christmas, like in January. Here are the gifts you should have gotten for Christmas. In the new regular feature for the Comic Cast, we are drinking wine at the minute. Do you want to give the name of the wine that you're drinking there, sir?
I am drinking a bottle of what I'm going to say is Isla Negra.
That's a bit racist. Sauvignon Blanc.
But read the other. Yeah,
it's a Chilean Sauvignon Blanc.
I suppose we should say this usually doesn't happen, but we had a bit of a light supper before we recorded the show. Actually, it's been years since we've done a podcast where we've had some drinks.
That's true.
Maybe some more than others.
We've been sober for a few years, but we've gotten over our addiction.
Yeah,
we've embraced
our addiction. Yeah. We haven't beaten it. We're still drinking.
No, I thought the point is we'd beaten it, so now we can have a drink. You know. Now we could just go back to start having a regular number of drinks. Yeah, by the end of this episode, we'll be throwing out stuff that we shouldn't be saying, fighting one another.
Absolutely.
Pissing on
fucking
children.
This is definitely going to be a whirlwind of a podcast.
But before all that,
we've got
the usual sort of sections. We've got some reviews of some Irish comics. We've got a lot of Irish comics. A few. And a few non-Irish comics.
A few
comics.
Is a lot for Irish comics,
That's true. I mean, it's not a big scene, but it is an impressive scene and one filled with talent. And we will be diving right into it, faces and hands first, this week. We've also got some movie reviews. You've seen Frank and Weenie.
I've seen Frank and Weenie.
I've seen Judge Dredd. We will contrast and compare it about those movies, Leaving Cert style. And then I've got a little bit of news. Not a lot happening.
Great.
But I've got some news. Do you want to jump right into the reviews? We do.
Comicast commence.
Do you want to do the Irish comics first?
Let's start with that. Well, how about, look, listen, we just got fucking nuts. And start with At War with the Empire.
Yes.
Which is Jerry Hunt's latest comic book from O'Brien Press. Mm. And obviously, Blood Upon the Rose was Jerry Hunt's last book, which has been phenomenally successful for O'Brien Press in terms of a comic book dealing with historical events. And I guess for any of our non-like Irish listeners, the 1960 or Blood Upon the Rose, 1916 Blood Upon the Rose, dealt with kind of early kind of War of Independence in Ireland, which kind of continues really in
directly
War
leads
with
into,
the Empire,
which is also the War of Independence
in 1919, with the Easter Rising of 1916. I'm just going to read from the press release now. This is the drink now. Mm. The Easter Rising of 1916, with its proclamation of independence, lit the spark that would eventually blaze into a full-scale war of independence in Ireland. Through the 1916 Rising, though the 1916...
Do you want me to read?
Yeah, you read it.
So I'm just going to read from the press release here. Okay, just real quick from the press release. The Easter Rising of 1916, with its proclamation of independence, lit the spark that would eventually blaze into a full-scale war of independence in Ireland. Though the 1916 Rising was put down within a week, the harshness of the British response greatly increased support for Sinn Féin, which is a Republican party. By 1918, disaffection with British rule was widespread, etc., etc. It's about the War of Independence. You know, if you've seen the movie Michael Collins, it covers pretty much the same ground, or a lot of the same ground that movie would cover. Not that there can't be two. I don't mean that to say there can't be two different things telling the same story, and that is not, valuable in some way, because of course it is. Like Blood Upon the Rose, you know, it's very similar to Blood Upon the Rose, Jerry Hunt's previous book.
Yes.
Yeah, my feelings on this are sort of mixed.
Okay.
I didn't really enjoy it all that much. I'm going right. to just, you know, continue.
Leighton's bear.
I'm going to continue to cut all our ties with O'Brien Press.
Comic-Cast, keeping it real.
The problem with this, again, is that it's more of a history book than a comic book. I've had this problem as well with The Siege of Clonmel and a few of these other historical Irish comics we've gotten where it's like, it's just sort of text and pictures describing the text, but not an actual story. Not story, but yeah. There's no character development.
Absolutely,
between a panel. 6 months could pass between panels. There's a like, it's very, I think, very clumsily written, to be honest. There's one panel. This is not a joke. This is in the comic. There's one panel that where the image shows a man whose handcuffs are being cut with a cleaver. So the cleaver is going through the chain on the handcuffs to free this man from the handcuffs. And I've taken here as a quote the text from that panel. It says, "There was no need for Sean to worry. One stroke of the meat cleaver and the chain was broken in two." Like, I could see the chain being broken too in the image.
I don't need
some text. One or the other, but you don't need both. So this book is full of text. Which I would say 50% of it is completely unnecessary, and the other 50% is sort of filling in the blanks between the panels. So, you know, and then they went to England, and then this happened, and then this happened. So as sort of a companion to maybe some sort of light studies, like a junior sort of leaving their studies of this thing or of this period, it might be valuable in that sense. But as a sort of comic book that one would enjoy, or to get a deeper sense of these characters or a deeper understanding, like, complete misses that mark. And maybe that wasn't the intention.
But do you think that's the point? Like, is that maybe, like, it seems to me, especially with the last one, and presumably they're continuing on with this one, is that it is almost like a resource of, you know, something to kind of give to people to make that history more accessible rather than the really boring textbooks we're all used to from school.
I agree 100%, and I think if you take it on those terms, that it is very successful in doing that, and absolutely would sort of, absolutely, you remember those history books from school, they're very dry, and this is definitely a sort of better way to sort of get that story. But then also, if you're looking for other ways to get that story, there's, you know, I wouldn't say superb, but quite good Michael Collins movie that covers this exact period and will give you that exact same information, I think, or a lot of the same information. Not that you couldn't take two sources, you know, and use those. The two sources could be as valuable or more valuable than one. But that said, like, the art by Jerry Hunt is very good. He's got a, you know, I don't want to say boring style, but you know, these characters are quite plain, they're quite sort of normal, but then when the violence breaks out and stuff, like, doesn't shy away from any of the violence, and the contrast between the two, the sort of extreme violence and then the sort of just these normal sort of looking characters, works very well. The colouring by a friend of the show, Matthew Griffin. Matthew Griffin,
yeah.
Because he's a friend of the show, you think I'd know his name. But he is very good as well. Lots of clever stuff used to sort of make a particular character stand out in particular scenes to sort of emphasise points. Just very clever use of colour in the book. So sort of a tentative recommendation in the sense that as a comic book for one to read and enjoy, it didn't really work on all levels for me, but again, as some sort of companion maybe to some sort of studies, or even just a sort of a light introduction to these characters, you know, for in a sort of an educational study sense, then I think this book would be quite useful in that way.
Okay, great. Well, that is out right now, and available in all
good bookshops. Does O'Brien Press, they can put books in shops. They can say a lot about them. Next Irish comic this week. Ghost of Shandon, written and drawn by Alan Corbett. This is a comic set in...
this is pretty much kind of like an independent comic, as far as we can...
Oh, yeah, it absolutely is, or as far as I know, yes. I didn't see the contracts behind the publishing, but I believe so. It's set in modern... Basically, the story starts off in modern day, where there's this young boy, Ronan, who has a rough time in school, and he bumps into this fairy, Aisling, who takes him back to 18th century Cork. But by doing that, she also sort of inadvertently unleashes another sort of monster, sort of ghost creature on 18th century Cork. So they're trying to get, Ronan back to his time, while also trying to stop this sort of ghost thing.
Okay.
And becoming friends. Right. Aisling herself has not had the nicest childhood, so they find some sort of common stuff to bond over. I won't go too much more into the story, but it has some interesting twists, and I'm a big fan of this. We're seeing a lot of this recently, but I'm a big fan of this trend. If you could call it that, of Irish mythological comics. I think there's like
it's a trend. It's absolutely
Trend. Yeah, it's a trend that I enjoy. I think there is so much good material to be mined there, to be used in comics, and it's a real sort of original, or sorry, not original, but unique thing that we have that other countries don't have, and I think people should be capitalizing on it. And it's done to good effect here. I just have to jump out and say, the art in this book is incredible by Mr. Alan Corbett. I was blown away. Not just the art itself is good. The characters are interesting, very unique, especially the monster or the ghost whose name I can't think of the name off the top of my head. But it, you know, it's really cool, really creepy. But also sort of I'm not an artist, unfortunately, but sort of the art is layered or textured maybe upon. There may be three panels on a page, say in sort of weird angles, but then under the panels there'll be like a map of Cork. So it's like the artist panel is layered on top of other art, and it just adds just gives a real sort of real unique style. Yeah, so I was really blown away by this art. I would it's almost good enough to buy just for the art. This story, the book's about 60 pages. Story's good, has good pacing.
That's a decent length for an Irish comic book.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
We're used to kind of seeing maybe 20 pages.
12 pages.
Yeah, 12 pages, and then issue two will come in like 2 years.
Sure, yeah, yeah. So actually this book ends on a cliffhanger, and I was surprised with the 60 pages. I thought, I just assumed when I started that it was a full story, but it's not. There is more to come.
But that's good news, though.
Yeah, it is good news, though. So I enjoyed this book tremendously. The one thing that if you push me to pick a problem with this book, there is one. I think it's a fairly major problem is that I don't feel like the characters Ronan or Aisling are developed particularly well. There's one scene at the start with Ronan where he has a bad childhood, and then Aisling explains that her childhood is not very good. But outside of that, they don't really have much like dialogue bonding. And with 60 pages to work with, I think it would have been a good idea to use some of those pages up front to sort of just develop these characters more, and then by being invested in those characters, because the story itself, the plot beats are good, but just I wasn't so invested in these characters as I wanted to be, compared to something like the Secret of Kells or something, where it's similar, a boy and a girl friendship, and that does that very well, unfair comparison perhaps, but it sort of fell down in that regard. But like I said, this is only the first part of the story. This is something that could easily be rectified in the second part, but I just think by focusing more on the dialogue between these two characters and getting me invested in them, I would have enjoyed the story significantly more.
But overall,
like 4 out of 5, I thought this was a really standout Irish comic, and I would recommend anyone to go pick it up right now.
Excellent.
Yeah, like I said, the art is incredible. So
awesome.
Pick it up.
Well, we'll link up where you can pick it up on the website on the blog.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
What's next? I believe there's one other Irish comic.
There is. This one is called Tales from the Void.
Oh, bum, bum, bum. Yeah, yeah. This is by
The writer, his name is Darren O'Toole, and the artist, his name is A. Kavaraj. His A being the first initial of this artist's name. I couldn't find anywhere on the book what his actual first name was. Maybe
Articus.
Artemis. Yeah. Let's
Artemis
go with that.
Fowl. Is it A?
No, it's just A.
Oh.
So, and even then, it probably wasn't Artemis Fowl. So this is sort of a collection, perhaps you can tell by the title, sort of a collection of short, weird sci-fi stories.
It kind of, if I can stop you there, it kind of reminded me of what Gar Shanley had done with the superhero showcase and then the mystery showcase.
Very similar, although like since those two were like a superhero one and then a sort of horror one. This is firmly in the sci-fi genre. But yes, very similar to, again, those old sort of 50s comics, all sort of weird B-movie sci-fi stories.
Twilight Zone.
Exactly, Twilight Zone. Sterling. That kind of stuff. This is, I can't remember exactly off the top of my head, about 30 pages, 25, 30 pages,
okay.
With maybe 5 sort of 4 to 8 page short stories that are all super clever. Yeah, all involve, sort of weird twists because they're so short and there's only 5 of them. I don't really want to spoil any of them.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
But for an example, one of them sort of involves these parents in space having to get rid of their, or to save their child, they dump him on a foreign planet, an alien planet, and then this baby is raised by
Superman, isn't it?
A little bit like Superman, but he's not dumped on Earth. It's on some weird alien planet, so the baby is raised by this like grotesque sort of alien monster. And I definitely won't spoil how it ends.
Okay.
But that's the kind of style we're going for here. Just weird twists. nearly every one of them ends with sort of a, like a crazy left turn twist, like in the last page. It's just a super fun, if you're into sort of 50 sci-fi, or that sort of sci-fi,
which we are,
which me and you definitely are. The art is great. I find it hard to describe, but if I said to you this is a comic that is based on 50s black and white sci-fi, this is what it looks like. That image you have in your mind is exactly what this comic looks like. It's okay. Like the perfect style for this comic. I actually couldn't recommend this highly enough. This is a 5 out of 5 comic. Darren O'Toole, he's publishing this himself. He's got, or from what I gather from the comic,
yeah,
he's got his own sort of imprint where he publishes his own comics. He's got a few more coming out that all look sort of, again, in this sort of sci-fi genre, which look great. There's just a couple of posters and stuff at the back, and so I'm really excited about those, especially excited to see what he might do with a longer story instead of these sort of short stories. But
absolutely.
No, a really great effort, and I would recommend anyone in the world who's nominated to pick those up.
And we'll get him on the show pretty soon.
Oh, is he going to be on the show?
Well, we'll get him on the show.
We should get him on the show.
He's, I mean, he doesn't know about it. He's probably listening, you know, for the review of my comics. Yeah. See how it's going. Oh, yeah. they're gonna ring me someday.
Yeah. We should definitely get him on. Okay, so that are all the Irish comics that I have this week.
That is
right. I've got a few English or a few American comics I can read. A review.
Why are we doing the English accent then? If you're American,
I don't know. Liam. It's a Sauvignon Blanc.
Where's your wine?
I didn't bring any wine. I'm a professional.
I'm not a professional.
Yeah, you're just sitting there drinking, looking at me, fucking leering at me with your yeah, sooner or later you'll be out of wine. Then where'll you be?
You'll be here on your own while I'm looking for a booze. Right, next comic.
So the big sort of American comic I wanted to review this week,
yeah,
Daredevil End of Days. Not related to the, Was it Arnie, or
it was Arnie? Yeah,
in End of Days,
it was Arnie,
Gabriel Byrne in that one. Oh no, yeah. Gabriel Byrne is Stigmata, and End of Days is Arnie. Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm confused. Both
your Arnie movies.
Yeah.
No, your Apocalypse.
No, movie. Yeah, exactly. So Marvel over the years have, this started before I started getting back into Marvel comics a few years ago.
Yes.
So I'm not familiar with the whole story, but Marvel had this idea, ingenious idea, I would like to say, where they would write the last story for all their superheroes. So like how their superheroes died.
Although, I mean, yeah, but that's like I think most kind of creative writers would tell you that maybe they might start with the ending.
And sure.
Just to know where they go. I know some people say, oh well, I just write it and see what happens. But
yeah. Oh, no, but it's a great idea. But the only thing being, I guess, because they have to be out of continuity, in the sense that, like, if they're writing the Wolverine one came out 10 years ago, and it's the last Wolverine story, but then they don't want, you know, the story could change over the next 100 years. Wolverine's never going to die, you know, so there's 100 years of story that, you know, that won't be sort of...
Hugh Jackman will always be in work.
Exactly. So they had this idea that these out of continuity last stories for these characters, and I think they didn't do very well, because they had this idea, like, they're all called The End, so it's like Fantastic Four, The End, Hulk, The End, and then they didn't do so well, but they kept making them, but they keep changing the name slightly. So then there was like Spider-Man
to be continued.
Yeah. But like Spider-Man Reign, which is brilliant, Silver Surfer Requiem, which is brilliant. Like Silver Surfer Requiem is one of the best comics ever written. Go out.
You say Requiem, I immediately think of Aliens versus Predator, awful film.
It's much better than that. I don't even like the Silver Surfer. Like, if you've taken one thing away from this comic, ask, like, go out and buy Silver Surfer Reign or Silver Surfer Requiem. It is one of the best comics ever written in history of man.
That's a shocker.
It's better than Watchmen. It's better than Watchmen. It's not better than Watchmen. That was I went too far. I guess,
forgive us, Alan Moore.
Yeah, I soared too close to the sun, and now my wings have been burned off. But anyway,
by his beard.
But we're not here to talk about all those other stories. We're here to talk about Daredevil End of Days. So this one has finally come out. This one has been in the works. I've been hearing about this for at least 6 years, and I've been so excited.
Really? 6 years?
At least 6 years I've been hearing about this comic being made. And oh, sorry, one of the other main things about this the End series is that they usually get some like people who worked on that character like in their heyday. So like the X-Men one, for example, is sort of Chris Claremont, who wrote the comics for 20 years, you know. So you should get someone back who doesn't work on the comics anymore. So in this case, they're
out of retirement bringing...
Yeah, but in fairness, artists. A lot of times, like, they're like, say, the big Iron Man artists, you know, from the 70s or 80s, they don't work in comics anymore for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So they bring them back and do... You
That's know, pretty good, yeah.
So it's cool. It's a good idea. So this one is written by Brian Michael Bendis, who does still work in comics. In fact, all these guys still actually work in comics quite regularly. But the artist is Klaus Janson, who worked with Frank Miller on the classic Daredevil run with Frank Miller. They're also I cannot pronounce this guy's name, but Bill Sinkyanky Vikovic, doing the Arnold.
I'm sure that's exactly how it's
pronounced. Yeah, who's also done stuff with Frank Miller's Daredevil and Elektra, and then also written by David Mack. We've also got Matt Hollingsworth doing colors and Joe Caramagna doing the lettering. So this is like if you're a Daredevil fan, like I am. This is the A team.
This is the bee's knees.
The only person missing is Frank Miller. Excuse me, if they had Frank Miller, that'd be great. But I say that, if they had 70s Frank Miller, it'd be great.
It'd be the cat's pajamas.
Yeah, yeah. If they had modern day Frank Miller, you've had too much wine. Modern day Frank Miller, maybe not so much. So maybe it's a good idea not to include him. So anyway, so that's just all the premise, all set up. So the story, Daredevil End of Days, not a big spoiler, but all these comics are about these characters dying. So in the first few pages...
There's going to be spoilers here.
There's minor spoilers. In the first two pages... Daredevil is murdered. He is killed. I won't tell you how he's killed.
Spoiler.
Yeah, yeah. It's first two pages. I mean, in the first issue.
First two pages. But you realize, though, we do occasionally get comments from people saying, you know, you do a lot of spoilers.
Yeah, people are idiots.
They come from you.
Yeah, yeah. They're idiots. Spoilers enhance the fun.
Was it you argued that spoilers, like, you know, made more people like?
Well, I didn't argue. This is completely off topic.
Yeah, yeah.
But I read a scientific study on it that proved.
That if someone found out a spoiler, that would make them more intrigued to find out.
Well, no, but this is completely off topic. We'll come back to Daredevil in a second.
Yeah.
But the experiment they ran was they gave, like, you know, I don't know the specifics exactly, but they got 100 people to read like 5 books and didn't tell them, they didn't know anything about the books, didn't know the spoilers, didn't know anything, and then rate them. You know, out of 10, what would you give that book? And then they got another 100 people and spoiled the whole story for them and got them to rate the same books, and they rated every book consistently higher. And the idea being, I think what they're saying was that when there's a twist, when there's a plot twist in a book or in a comic or a movie, that you kind of feel stupid a little bit that you didn't see it coming. And while if you know it, so that sort of is sort of negative thing with the
when
book.
When you know it's coming.
And when you know it's coming, then you're like, aha!
And
it's a positive thing. Yeah, and so people enjoyed books slightly more. But in zero cases, like not one of the 100 thought less of a book because it was
spoiled. So in short, every time we spoil a comic, we're making it better for you.
We're enhancing your enjoyment.
All right. Daredevil.
First two pages, Daredevil is murdered. I won't go too much more into the story, but let's just say it centers around...
I don't think you could.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, all these books are about the title character dying, so I don't think that's a spoiler anyway. But it centers around the biggest villains of Daredevil, which would be Bullseye and Kingpin, and also journalist Ben Urich. This is only the first issue of 8. The story is told in a sort of a Citizen Kane style where Ben Urich, the reporter, Daredevil says a word. Like, I mean, it's pretty blatant. He says a word when he dies and nobody knows what it means. And Ben Urich, the reporter, is going around it's something similar. I won't say what it is. And Ben Urich is
going... Go on, it'll enhance our enjoyment.
No, I just don't remember. But Ben Urich's going around trying to, I guess, sort of write an obituary of Daredevil and how... When he dies, he's not really a hero. He's kind of looked down upon by people. So Ben Urich's trying to tell the truth of Daredevil, and also trying to figure out what his last words meant, and how did he fall so far. And there's a couple other twists that that Citizen Kane thing is blatant, but it is also like they make a Citizen Kane joke in the story. It's not like they're trying to be we're being so clever. It's like they know they're ripping off Citizen Kane. And actually, that has come to me. Brian Michael Bendis, the writer, actually did a very similar Citizen Kane story with Batman, which I will spoil because I guarantee nobody's ever going to be able to find it. Never mind read it. It's like 8 pages long, and. I think he said it was like what was Bruce Wayne's last words. I think they were a rosebud, and they were going around trying to find, you know, what does this rosebud mean? And then it was like written on the gun that shot his parents or something was the twist that he had. Something like
which
that.
Which is actually quite kind of a shit twist, I would have said.
Yeah, 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 yeah. You're drunk. You're getting angry.
No, but it was like what rosebud was written on the name of the gun.
I don't remember exactly.
Oh, crap.
It was something like that.
My bad memory. I'm just going to turn it on you being drunk.
Yeah, yeah, you're an angry drunk. Yeah, so. By getting all these classic artists back, Daredevil, the art is incredible. If you have any interest in Daredevil, you need to be picking up this comic. By the sort of quality of this first issue, if it holds up, it will be one of the greatest Daredevil stories ever told. So I'm really super excited.
Would that be hard?
Yes, it would. There's a lot of classic Daredevil stories.
Okay.
I know, some people don't like the Daredevil.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do. Okay. There's all some, right. Pretty much all the Frank Miller stuff. The Frank Miller stuff. Ed Brubaker's one is pretty good. So that, yeah. So those are the comic reviews for the week.
Those are the comic reviews. The month. Well, yeah.
Or whenever, you know.
Whenever we decide to come back. Yeah. You know, it's a new dawn, it's a new day.
Movies. Michael Tell me about Frank and Weenie. That once.
Frank and Weenie. So Frank and Weenie is out in America right now.
Yeah. Doing very poorly in the box office.
You said that to me before the show, but I'm
think
quite
it did
shocked.
Something like $5 million at the weekend. Okay. It was pretty poor.
Well, Frank and Weenie, of course, is Tim Burton's latest film.
Yes.
It's a stop-motion animated film in the vein of Corpse Bride and The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Can I interrupt really quickly? There's only one thing I need to know about this movie. Tim Burton has this habit of sort of... he makes one movie for Disney, and then he makes one movie for himself. And then he makes another movie for Disney, he makes a movie for himself. And by for himself, I mean sort of... like Dark Shadows or something, which clearly nobody wants to see except Tim Burton, you know what I mean?
Right.
While one for Disney would be like Alice in Wonderland.
This is the one that's for Tim Burton.
Great, that's all I want to know.
Frank and Weenie was a short that a lot of people may remember that Tim Burton made in the past. That was this the one that Vincent Price narrated?
I believe
this
so,
one
yeah.
That was called Vincent?
Oh no, there's two. Vincent is... Vincent and Frank and Weenie's Frank and Weenie.
Oh, there was one actually called...
It's about half an hour long. It's on the Nightmare Before Christmas DVD.
Okay. So this is obviously an expanded version of that. And in short, there's going to be minor spoilers here. I just want to flag that.
Sure.
Frank and Weenie is about a young boy who's kind of like... who looks, in stop motion animated effect, looks like a young Johnny Depp.
Sure.
And it is about him and his best dog, Sparky. And he lives with his parents and he goes to school and he's kind of like the oddball kid in school, you know. He doesn't really play sports. He's more into science. But the number one thing is here is that he really loves his dog. And so his dad encourages him to play baseball. And at an unfortunate outing at the baseball game, Victor kind of hits the ball right out of the park, and Sparky, his beloved dog, goes running after it and is hit by a car. Sparky's dead.
Oh no.
I think that's not really a spoiler.
I think that's in the trailer.
Yeah, I think that's in the trailer. So the whole point of the movie...
It's also the title.
Yes. So the whole point of the movie is that Victor, as his science project, decides to try and bring Sparky back to life via the kind of Frankenstein route. In fact, the second name of the family is Frankenstein. Yeah, so
he brings the dog back to life.
He brings the dog back to life. Just, yeah, I guess even in the plot. Yeah, yeah. He brings the dog back to life, and that the other kids in the school who are involved in the science project, and they really want to win, and they kind of have discovered that Victor has brought Sparky back to life, and they want to bring things back to life, or, you know, they want to try their hand at it anyway. So, you know, they all try, and it all goes kind of wrong.
Sure.
I mean,
so far so good.
So far so good. So I guess out of 5 stars, I guess I find it easier to say, you know, what I thought overall and work backwards.
Sure.
Is that out of 5 stars, I would give this 4.
Sure.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, 4 is pretty good.
Above average.
Yeah, like it's pretty good. Mm. The first thing about this movie is that's really striking is that it's entirely in black and white, which. I mean, it's striking from the point of view that obviously, like, you know, if you're into film, you're going to be watching, like, old movies that you don't care if they're in black and white, or you're watching an art house movie and you just accept that it's black and white. But actually, it kind of hit me that, like a lot of, I don't know if kids even give a shit about color.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? I actually don't know.
I'm pretty sure they love color.
Yeah, well, yeah, but that's my initial thoughts. That, oh, like, it's a kids movie or a family movie, so it's got to have lots of color.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I was thinking about it, and I was actually thinking, like, you know what I mean? If there's enough kind of interesting characters or...
that would be the hope.
Witty scenes, yeah, exactly, that the kids won't give a shit. Overall, this is a film about, like, a boy and his dog. And this story is as old as time itself. Like, it really is. I mean, this is, like... So from that That perspective, like, even though that is an old story, it still works. Sure. It, like, you know, even as a kind of...
As a dog owner yourself, you could...
As a dog owner myself. Well, as I was saying before we went on air, like, I cried twice during Frankenweenie. And let me tell you the two times I cried.
Basically, don't spoil them too hard.
Okay, well, I'll tell you the first time I cried. Yeah. Which is one I've already told you, was when Sparky is hit by a car.
Oh, yeah.
And dies.
Sure. Something similar happened to your dog recently.
Yes. My dog in real life was hit by a car, but survived.
Yeah.
And is an operation well, in the
I
cage.
I actually did some sort of lightning-based resurrection.
But yeah, so, I mean, like, it's a funny one, because even though, like, this is a really good film, and it's definitely Tim Burton's best film in... You know, in maybe his last three or four films.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, even especially even in stop motion. Like, I'm not a fan of Corpse Bride at all.
I didn't mean that.
Bit of a fiasco. So I was kind of looking forward to this because, I mean, it pays homage to all the kind of old Universal horror films, all the like the really old ones, kind of with Christopher Lee. And the werewolf and the mummy and all these kind of like monster movies that Universal Studios is kind of like built on.
Yeah, yeah.
And in that respect, yeah, it's really good. And I mean, I guess I kind of like I read a lot of reviews previously when it came out in America where it was saying that, you know, oh, there's loads of kind of, you know, these little kind of touches to kind of these movies. And there is, but there's not that many, you know, there's not that many to kind of go like, oh, this is, you know. You know, there's kind of the fairly obvious ones, like there's a kid who's clearly a child version of Peter Lorre, you know what I mean, which is kind of funny.
That's awesome, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and there's like all the kids, basically all the other kids are all kind of slightly more normal versions of Universal monster characters, even though they're just still, you know, kids. Sure, yeah. So there's one that's like is Frankenstein,
sure.
Etc. So overall, it's I mean, in a way, it's kind of a slight story, you know.
Sure.
Boy's dog dies.
Sure.
Boy resurrects dog. Some kind of minor havoc is raised during the you know, the kind of bringing dead animals back to life. So from that perspective, I kind of thought like. I kind of thought it was going to be a big kind of adventure, and it's really not. It really is kind of like a kind of lower key, sure. Kind of thing.
It does sound, if I interrupt, a lot like the original, which is pretty much the same story. I haven't seen the movie yet, but it's the same thing. His dog dies, brings him back. Some minor havoc ensues. The townspeople aren't too happy about it, and then, you know, it also ends tragically. But what's different, I think, from the original is that now they have. Well, obviously all the stop motion creatures and stuff that the other kids bring back to life, while in the original it was really just a really cheap dog that they painted, you know, and that's the only creature they had. So it's cool to see that, yeah, if they expanded that out, then it sounds like it'd be interesting.
So I guess the other things is like the actual stop motion puppets look great. They really do look like kind of Tim Burton's doodles, yeah. That he has for kind of some of the books, like Oyster Boy.
Yeah.
Etc. So they really do look like that. As I said, the lead really does look like a kind of young Johnny Depp.
I thought he looked very really much weird. Like the model they had for him, Corpse Bride, that was played by Johnny Depp, except smaller.
Really does. And actually, a 12-year-old friend of ours, Paul, his 12-year-old told me that, and I don't know how she knows this or found out about this, but she said that apparently the young kid in this, Victor, is supposed to be the chap who grows up to be the lead in Corpse Bride.
Oh, really?
So I haven't looked into that, but it's an interesting theory because they do look identical.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess just a brief touch on the voice acting in this is there's kind of a few key players.
Is Johnny Depp in it?
Johnny Depp's not in this.
Blow my mind too much. Is Helena Bonham Carter in it?
No.
What the fuck?
I know.
Tim Burton, get the fuck out of here.
Man, he's getting a divorce from his wife. But you will be pleased to know that Winona Ryder is in it as, and I'm kind of pleased to know this myself because as the kind of next door, the kid next door, who again looks kind of like Winona Ryder, but the two main the plaudits have to go to Martin Short. Now I know you're not a big Martin Short fan. You just thrown his eyes up to heaven.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a genuine. And now I'm a huge fan of Martin Short, but I kind of like when I read the credits, before I seen this film and seen that Martin Short was maybe like the second billing, I thought that's kind of weird. Like, it seems like a weird thing for Tim Burton to do. I don't think Martin Short has been in any of
not that I can think of.
Yeah, his previous movies. But he actually voices Victor's dad. He voices our kind of the mayor next door. It's kind of a bit of an evil doer. And he voices one or two other characters, but who all sound incredibly different, and even like any of them don't even come close to sounding like the way you think Martin Short is going to sound. Like Victor's dad, he plays Victor's dad, who kind of looks like he might be in his 30s, even in his 40s, but like it the voice just suits perfectly. It sounds like really quite kind of young, and like Martin Short is definitely in his 50s, if not in his 60s. I'm quite confident he's in his 60s. So he did great, like really good voice acting, I have to say. Like, from, and again, not like really, you know, even the kind of next door, the mayor, who's kind of the villain of the piece, isn't, you know, hugely over the top or anything. And then we have Catherine O'Hara, who you remember from kind of a lot of the movies from, who you remember from Best in Show and For Your Consideration, which also starred Ricky Gervais at the time. You remember those ones? Yeah, it wasn't very good. But she also voices Victor's mother and also several other characters. And in a stroke of genius, Tom Kenny, who you'll know as SpongeBob SquarePants, is credited as voicing the townsfolk. So like anyone, we see, you know, male or female, he just is voiced, you know, overall. I did enjoy this. I did enjoy it. I would give it 4 stars, but I kind of thought it'd be a little bit more adventurous. I don't want to say epic. It doesn't need to be like a Lord of the Rings trilogy, but I kind of thought there'd be a little bit more scope to it, and there kind of wasn't. And also the kind of the nods to kind of B-movies and everything. I mean, they were there, but you know, like any kind of discerning film fan would, you know, kind of get them. But yes, anyway, so I am giving that two thumbs up.
Yeah, four stars. 4 stars out of 5. 1¾ thumbs up. Other movies, Dread is out in cinemas. In fact, it's out of the cinemas by the time you hear this. I doubt you could find a cinema that would be showing it anymore, so I'll keep it short. I'll do it, Liam Garrity, and give this the rating first and then work backwards. This is a 4 out of 5 movie. I was very angry. Actually, just a complete side note before I even get into this movie. Not angry is a strong word, because I was very indifferent that Empire gave this movie 3 out of 5 stars. And then if you listen to the Empire podcast, which you shouldn't, when they talk about it, they talk about it like it's a 5-star movie, but they're just like, oh, but you know, it's like an action movie. Like, well, really enjoyed this, one of the best movies I've ever seen, but it's an action movie, so can't give it 5 stars. I'll give it 3 stars. Fuck yourselves, Empire. Go fuck yourselves. In case you don't know, Judge Dredd is this set in a post-apocalyptic future where the cops are these guys called judges. They're both, who, you know, as they're described, as both judge, jury, and executioner. They deliver the sentence as they arrest a perp. Sometimes they just kill them. Exactly. And this Carl Urban plays the title character, Judge Dredd, who, through a sort of series of unfortunate events, ends up trapped in a big tower block, which has 200 levels just filled with bad guys that want to take him down, and also the recruit he's training on that day, Judge Anderson.
It's kind of like The Raid.
It's got a lot in common with The Raid, unfortunately, in that The Raid is a better movie that came out very similar in a similar time frame. But it's unfortunate, because Judge Dredd is also a great movie. It's just unfortunate that it came out so close together. Mm. This is a great movie. If you have a love like I do for sort of 80s over the top violence and action, like this is something like Class of 84 or something like that, and also this sort of 80s kind of post apocalyptic future, not sort of what we'd see in something like the Walking Dead, was more modern, but it's got a real 80s vibe to it. Carl Urban plays Judge Dredd. He never takes off his helmet, unlike Sylvester Stallone in the original, so it's all chin. He does a lot with that chin. I read somewhere that apparently, like, he says fuck all. He's got about 10 lines that's in this movie.
Really?
Well, 10 is a strong, maybe 10 is low, but not a lot. Yeah. I read somewhere that he cut, that the script had very few lines for Judge Dredd, and then Carl Urban requested that a lot more would be taken out. He didn't think they were necessary. Rare for an actor to take lines out. The Just Dredd in this movie is training or is taking this kind of character, Anderson, on her first day on the job. This is played by a girl or a woman, Olivia Thirlby, who I'm not familiar with. I think she's in some TV show. Probably.
She is. She sounds like a... The name rings a bell. She sounds like a comedian, actually.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with her, to be honest. She's
in Tyrannosaurus?
No, you're thinking of Olivia, your one from Peep Show.
Yeah.
It's not her. Oh, okay. It is a much younger American actress. Well, they both have the first name Olivia and a completely different surname. The Anderson character, so she plays this character, Anderson, who is this female judge who has psychic powers. Which is a bit stupid, but what is important?
Do you have them in the comic?
So I should say this isn't based on any comic story that I'm familiar with. I don't remember her character from the comics. I don't remember the villain is played by Lena Headey, named Mama. I don't remember her from the comics. But I'm also, I should point out, not that familiar with Judge Dredd comics, so I could be completely wrong on that. But what's awesome about her character, Olivia Thirlby's character, is that usually this character, this sort of female sidekick on her first day, again, I can't give any good frame of reference, they're usually annoying, and usually they only exist to sort of get kidnapped in the final act as something for, you know, the Judge Dredd character to sort of rescue. And she does get kidnapped in the third act, but, you know, but there's sort of a bit of a twist on that. But
I thought you were going to give us like a new light of day there, you know.
No, no. But I would say, like I said, this character is usually annoying, but she isn't. She's pretty good in it, and they do a couple of nice twists on that. Like I said, Lena Headey plays the character Mama, who is the villain, who, you know, if more people had gotten to see this movie, would have went down in history as one of the most terrifying screen villains in movie history. She's incredible, like a real sort of she never even raised her voice for this whole movie, but the whole time she's like, just, you just see she's just ready to explode and just rip off faces. Like, she's just an incredible performance.
Okay.
I really underrated. I think she should get a best actress nod, but that seems very unlikely. the 3D in this movie, I've seen people say that it's very good. These people are idiots. This is some of the worst 3D I've seen this side of, I don't know, like Wrath of the Titans.
Any 3D movie you've seen.
Yeah, like Clash of the Titans or something. No, but even someone like the really bad ones, like Clash of the Titans.
Retrofitted
3D fucking movies. It's awful. There are these sort of weird, the main story revolves around this slow motion drug that people take. You might have seen a trailer where things slow down, you know, and there's weird rainbows appearing and stuff, and all that stuff just looks fucking awful in 3D, even though the effect itself is quite good. I just really, really enjoyed this movie. It's just a real solid action movie. Despite not being based on any sort of comic story that I'm familiar with, takes the characters very seriously. It's got a good, I wouldn't say laughs. There's laughs that come from Judge Dredd being completely like unmovable, but yeah, it's just a really fun, really enjoyable movie. I would check it out. It's probably not in cinemas anymore, but get the DVD for Christmas. Get it in your Christmas stocking. That's an early Christmas recommendation from the Comic Cast. Yes.
Anyway, quick recap on the news before we wind up this fucking mad show.
Yeah, I've only got a very small few pieces of news, but I will turn them out there. In order of excitement, going from least exciting to most exciting, Miss Marvel, who is a character in the
Miss
Marvel
Marvel,
comics.
Not Miss Marble.
No, Miss Marvel.
Awesome. Fucking. Well, I get the Christie comics.
Wait, yeah, it would have been great if that had been the start of the sentence when you hear the end of the sentence. Miss Marple is being cast for the second Avengers movie.
That would have been great.
Yeah, yeah. Just solving some sort of minor crimes.
What are you gentlemen doing?
Yeah, where's the bread from the baker was stolen and I need to find
where's
the bread.
My friend Peter Ustinov?
Yeah, yeah. Interestingly, Emily Blunt has been looked at for the role, who, I mean, she's in loads of things like Looper and a 5-year engagement recently. But the point being, she was being looked at. She had been cast, as far as I know, as Black Widow in the original Avengers movie, but then had to jump out due to contractual obligations. But now she looks like she's coming back. Second piece of news, Mark Webb, director of 500 Days in Summer and The Amazing Spider-Man, is coming back.
Two good movies.
To direct The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Spider-Harder.
Oh, okay, relatively pleasing.
Yeah, no, that's good news. Also, Andrew Garfield is confirmed to be returning. Emma Stone, you know, has not signed yet, but should be back.
I'm kind of like, I mean, like, if you had said Andrew Garfield is not returning, You know, they're considering, you know, another reboot. Young actor, like, fuck off. Yeah. I am fucking through with Spider-Man.
And then finally, the most exciting piece of news.
Oh, okay.
Stephen Mooney's Half Past Danger to be published by IDW Comics. I'm really excited about it. Everyone I've seen has looked good. The part of this news came at the DICE comic convention that we didn't attend. Unfortunately, I was in England and you were in work. There couldn't, I believe it was meant to be 7 issues, and Stephen, they're now cutting it down to 6 issues for the IDW thing, but that just means the issues will be longer. And also, there is a backup story by John Hendrick. That his name?
John Hendricks. You're right.
Doing really? A backup story. Yeah, yeah. So that would be. So it sounds like each issue is going to be packed.
And also a great comic writer. So, and he's going to be doing stories that we've set in
that
world as well. So yeah, we were just both super excited about that here, and definitely we'll keep you updated on that as more develops, as news develops here in the newsroom. And that is all the news I have this week. There was other news, I didn't like it, so I didn't write it down.
Yeah, fuck it.
It was all negative. We're all positive here in the Comic Cast. That's it. That's another episode.
Final words.
Done and dusted.
Let's have a final thought like Jerry Springer used to have.
I've been trying to come up with good like a good final last words for myself for when I'm on my
deathbed. You used to be good. Do you remember like you used to like all I remember in the early days of the podcast you definitely used to come up with a last kind of thing that you would say.
Sure. Well, like here's an inside fact. This is like I'm going to blow people's minds including yours because you don't know this that if there's one thing I love more than comics, it's podcasts. Like literally all you know this. All I do is listen to podcasts all day, every day. So all those last like lines would have been the last Stolen. Lines yeah, from yeah. other podcasts.
Oh, definitely, I remember. Sure. You've definitely but, flagged them when they were.
But also throughout, I don't do it as much anymore. But throughout all the old podcasts, I would just throw in really random lines that would just be stolen from podcasts.
Really,
layer them in there. Yeah, yeah.
Really random lines.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Like completely, like you would just be saying a review and you would say a completely random line.
Absolutely.
And I wouldn't pick up.
And you
on
wouldn't
it.
Notice it. As sort of an in-joke for people.
That is ridiculous. I am outraged that you have a fucking in-joke on our fucking podcast and I didn't even know about it.
Yeah, yeah. So
it was maybe I've been doing that too.
It was like, no,
I haven't.
It was an Easter egg for people who listen to the Comicast but also listen to the very specific list of podcasts that I also
Bullshit.
Listen to.
Bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. Go back and listen to the archive.
Absolutely.
So that's while you're waiting for the next episode of the podcast, feel free to go back into our archives and find hidden gems of Easter eggs in the previous episodes.
Okay, we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Good night.